Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court.
Good morning.
My name is Jed Stone on behalf of Jeffrey Goldberg.
You know, Mr. Stone, of all the cases that were here today, I think my question to, you know, everyone is most relevant in your case, because when you read Judge Hader's opinion here,
he was certainly upset.
Mm-hmm. It's clear, I think, that he would impose the same or a higher sentence if he perceived the guidelines to be advisory. And I mean, is Mr. Goldberg willing to risk on remand that possibility?
Let me tell you two reasons why I think that this court should remand and why Mr. Goldberg should take that risk. The first is that we take some comfort in the constitutional lore of Pierce versus North Carolina, that if he hasn't done anything to aggravate the sentence.
You're making the same mistake as in the previous case.
Well,
were you here to listen to that?
I heard.
The issue is not vindictiveness. That's completely unrelated.
Let me tell you
the vindictiveness comes in when a person is resentenced under the same legal regime. And so then the question is, well, to the judge, why did you give him a heavier sentence? But when it's a completely different legal ball game that he's going to be playing in on remand.
If you look at Judge,
such a serious mistake that you're making.
I take to heart
potentially disastrous for your clients.
I take to heart.
When you tell them, you know, oh, Pierce case, don't have to worry.
Well,
sentence is a ceiling.
I did say
you just go down.
I did say there were two reasons, and if you'll let me talk about the second. I will take to heart this court's admonition and communicate the admonition to Mr. Goldberg. Let me tell you that the other reason is that in his sentencing memorandum, Judge Shader sentenced the defendant to 57 months, the very top end of the sentencing guidelines for the two-point enhancement, but in fact sentenced him to 52 months. That is, after he heard all of the evidence in mitigation, thought that 57 months was excessive, and sentenced him to 52. That tells me, Judge, that if we go back to a new sentencing, 52 months is the likely cap of a sentence, and that the sentence was entirely based upon the two-point enhancement of vulnerable victims, without which there wouldn't have been a sentence in the 52-month range, but rather a sentence 2 points down in a much lower range.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a better reason.
Thank you. The rule, I think, that's before this court is that any fact other than a prior conviction which is necessary to support a sentence exceeding the maximum authorized by facts established by a plea of guilty or a jury verdict must be admitted by the defendant or proved to a jury beyond a reasonable doubt. That's Apprendi, and it's the law. I think that it's clear that Mr. Goldberg admitted to facts that would support a sentence between 37 and 46 months, but that the judge imposed a two-point enhancement for facts that were not submitted to a jury and proven beyond a reasonable doubt.
Well, did you dispute that the various letters from the victims, did you dispute that those, or did you try to argue that those were false letters or that they were made up, or dispute what was contained in there? That is, specifically when you look at his aunt and the various people who indicated in the letters what their situations were, did you dispute those underlying facts?
Judge, those facts were never adversarially tested. The government didn't present the evidence. The government didn't seek an enhancement for vulnerable victims.
And was there an objection to those being admitted?
Well, they weren't admitted. The judge attached them to his sentencing order.
Right. Yeah. I don't mean admitted in a trial or sentencing proceeding, but that were those letters contested by you either in the PSI or after the court?
Well, those letters were not attached to the PSI. Many of those letters were never seen by the defendant or his counsel.
And at the time when they were seen, they were ultimately seen?
They were seen at the day of sentencing when Judge Shader attached them to his sentencing memorandum.
Yes, and was there a request at that time to continue the matter? Or was there anything said when he did that, when that was attached, that this was inappropriate or improper for the court to do it? I guess you'd say no, because we weren't in the land we are now.
We're not in the land we are now. It was a fait accompli at that point. And there was this case is different from Palladino or Payton or Turner or Velif or Melendez or Garp or Spano or last Friday's case of Makudiek. Because in each of those cases, the government advanced evidence of the aggravating factor, and the evidence was heard by and adversarially tested in the district court. In this case, the government said, we don't believe that this is a case of vulnerable victims. There was no adversarial testing of the vulnerable victim standard. We've briefed that issue before the court and don't believe under existing Seventh Circuit law that the vulnerable victim enhancement should have applied in the old days of guidelines.
How much ahead of the sentencing itself did you receive Judge Shader's memorandum?
August. Oh, no. The sentencing memorandum itself?
Mm-hmm.
After the sentencing.
I mean,
after.
Another.
He read it in open court.
Oh, that's right. He
read it in open court and made a copy available to the defendant and, I dare say, to the press after it had been read. And that's why I said to Judge Williams that it was a fait accompli.
Yeah.
There was no point in objecting at that point. Our objection was here. I'd like to reserve some time for rebuttal unless the court has other questions.
Fine. Thank you, Mr. Stone.
Thank you.
Mr. Ryan?
May it please the court. Good morning. Jake Ryan from the U.S. Attorney's Office here in Chicago. The first point I'd like to make, Your Honors, is that defense counsel represented that it was a fait accompli. The district court put this sentencing memorandum out at the sentencing hearing. There was no request in the record that I've reviewed. I didn't do this sentencing hearing personally, but there was no request in the record for additional time to test the veracity of the letters or of the two vulnerable victims in particular that I've discussed in my brief or that seemed important to the district court.
But there was no notice to the defendant that the district court was going to pull these letters out at sentencing and use them?
No, ma'am. Not until the sentencing memorandum came out the day of the sentencing. But likewise, there was no request for additional time to investigate, to challenge the contents of the two letters.
But, in other words, both the government and the defense were surprised, let us say, because, of course, the government had not thought to ask for the vulnerable victim adjustment.
I believe that's correct, Your Honor.
And doesn't our case law say that defense counsel needs to have notice when the court is going to rely on factors that have not been, you know, preliminary aired, that is, the court given some indication that this is something under consideration?
I think it is appropriate to give notice.
So
I believe there
that's
was
a problem, isn't it?
Well, I believe there was some notice in this case.
What would the notice have been?
What was the notice?
I think the notice was at the sentencing hearing. The court.
When the court read the order and it was over?
Yes, ma'am. And I think, I'm not certain, but I believe Judge Shader.
What kind of notice is that?
Well, I believe Judge Shader.
Notice by stun.
If they would have sought additional time, I think it's likely that Judge Shader may have given that to them.
No, but you just agreed, and our case law says, you know, if the district court is going to consider factors that were not, say, in the PSI, or even if it's in the PSI, I mean, if the district court independently sees another ground that it wants to enhance, it's very clear that notice has to be given to defendant that the court is going to consider these things so the defendant can make some objection or concede or whatever before the sentencing. But here it was the sentencing when the defendant found out.
Yes, ma'am.
And that's a problem.
It does sound like it's a problem to the court.
Well, is it a problem in the government's view?
Your Honor, I didn't spend a lot of time thinking about this particular issue, the adequacy of the notice. So I guess I haven't formulated a position exactly.
Defense counsel was in between the devil and the deep blue sea here, because the judge came in with 57 months but left with 52 months, you know, to make a decision at that moment to ask for more time. I don't, you know, that's rough, isn't it?
Well,
or to continue when, you know, you see that you've gotten some kind of a bonus, let us say.
I think it was likely a difficult position for the defense lawyer, who would have had to thought on his feet, think on his feet pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Your Honor, there's one other item that that my office would like the court to consider. I have conferred with the appellate lawyers in our section, and we believe that the court should at least consider whether, in the context of a Palladino remand, whether, if the court were to say, if Judge Shader were to say, I would have given him 10 years, whether in that limited remand it would be appropriate to give him 10 years. Whether the court would be in its discretion in that limited remand to give him more, since he was going to give up. I mean, since theoretically he would be giving a higher sentence instead of just a lower sentence.
There has to be resentencing if the judge wants to resentence.
Mm-hmm. That's correct. And
I mean, the judge is supposed to advise us as to whether he wants to resentence. And if he does want a resentence, we say, well, that shows there was a plain error, and so we remand. That's a complete remand, and then the judge resentences. There's no way he can impose a sentence in the limited remand. We still have jurisdiction. Mm-hmm. We just remand to get his advice on whether he wants to resentence the defendant.
I understand. And if the court has no further questions, I'll step down.
Thank you, Mr. Ryan. And Mr. Stone, how much time does he have? 3 minutes?
Having heard that I'd been caught in the devil in the deep blue sea, and I was the trial lawyer in this case, and having heard the questions that the court has put to the government, unless you have questions for me, I think I'd just as soon stand on third base and wait for the opinion.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Judge.
Both counsel. The court will stand in recess until 9:30 tomorrow.